Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Simon Portman from Marks & Clark. Hi, Simon.
Hi there. How are you, Andrew?
Very good. Thanks, Simon. Very good to have you with us. I had the pleasure of meeting you at Oxford AI Network event, and then you did a fantastic talk for us at Henley Business School when we were running an AI summit. So it's good to have you now so we can talk in a bit more detail.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for organising the Henley Summit. It was a great event and a great venue, and I didn't realise that Henley was such a hotbed of innovation and business angels.
Yeah, we are. That's great. Thanks very much for that. And we'll make that presentation available where people can get that, because I think that's the context of what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
So just to set a bit of context, you know, I've been involved in tech change and business change for over 20 years now. And I suppose I go back to the late 90s when the internet boom sort of started and businesses were a bit scared about this internet thing. You know, people online are weird. How's it going to change our business? What are the legal implications of it? And of course, we've seen waves of things like GDPR and context and privacy and all that. And artificial intelligence is now the next big wave. And what we're going to talk about today is the legal aspects of it. So you've been quite an expert in AI, and give us an introduction to yourself and Marks & Clark and what you do.
Yeah, well, Marks & Clark are an international firm of patent and trademark attorneys and IP lawyers. I'm on the commercial side as a lawyer, so I advise on commercial contracts and anything to do with developing and exploiting technology. And I'm in our digital transformation group. So I'm in the AI team and I head up the XR team. And I'm in various other teams as well. And I advise clients in all areas. And I found since I first started in Cambridge in the late 90s that there's more and more cross-disciplinary activity. So if you're advising in healthcare, then it's no longer a case of just advising on small molecule compounds. AI and XR and other digitization elements are getting into that as well. So it's a very exciting time in all these fields.
Great, right. So yeah, you can see we've got fantastic experience and context than that for this then. So that some of the key topics we're going to cover then is about content and copyrights. And we're going to cover about regulation more generally, but the power of AI and that in our discussion today. So maybe let's kick off with these large language models and training these models. They've used a lot of content from places. What's the sort of copyrights or legal implications of these sorts of things? What's your view on that topic?
Well, there is a lot of litigation going on now, as you see. There have been both well-known companies and organisations like the New York Times and Getty going after these AI companies. You've had class action lawsuits where artists or writers have been getting together to jointly go after these companies also for copyright infringement. What they are basically saying is that the training of these LLMs on their material is an infringement of that copyright, and that they are making a lot, these companies are then producing AI products that are going to be immensely profitable, and they've been piggybacking off other people's creativity, and it is an infringement of copyright and not right that they should be doing that without there being any payments in return. On the other hand, the AI companies are saying that this is fair use. This is not copyright infringement. It falls under fair use, or any copyright infringement in terms of it actually being copyright. Copying of material is so minor, or the output is so transformative, that it just doesn't count. So these arguments have yet to be tested in the final decisions in the court. However, in the UK, it's been found that one of these cases will be proceeding to trial, and there is enough merit in it. So I think that all these things are going to be looked at as a big test case. My gut feeling is that what will come out of this is some sort of licensing model whereby the copyright owners will, under some quasi CLA model, get paid royalties for use of their material, and the AI companies will be agreeing to this or signing up to some sort of framework like this, so that they feel that they can then proceed with their training of their models without being sued. But I think we have some time to go on that, but I think that's what is going to come out of it. The UK Supreme Court decision to allow one of these cases to proceed to trial, it was quite interesting reading it, because the judge in question didn't seem to be that impressed with the validity of the claim for copyright infringement, but then said, "I think there is enough merit for this to proceed to trial anyway." So I suspect that judges are a bit wary. They realise that this is a seminal case, and they're a bit wary of getting any flak for just knocking it back and dismissing it.
I suppose the perspective I've got on it, as you said, these things learn to just digitize everything, and it becomes creative when it starts putting different ideas together. That's text or images and sort of stuff like that. So I guess I'm not a lawyer, but in terms of you're not actually copying, you're not sort of literally cutting and pasting from somebody's website and sort of putting it in, are you? It is learning, but it is. There are thing examples now where, yes, if you said I want to use Super Mario Brothers image, yes, the LLM will tell you no, I'm not allowed to use that. But if you said I want to do create an image of an Italian cartoon character that's a cook that works in games, something very similar to that will sort of come up, but it's not necessarily a literal example of that image. Or there's other examples I've seen of. Show me an android in space, and a Star Wars type character sort of pops up. So, is this the gray area in the copyright and legal sort of th thing that's going to be debated, do you think?
I think so. I think it's going to be a case of how fair use is interpreted, and how much evidence there is of copying. So I think the New York Times case against OpenAI and Apple, they've seemed to put a lot of work in citing records of copyright registrations, evidence that AI models were trained on their articles, and they've also thrown in a trademark claim as well. So I think that one will definitely go to trial. Whereas maybe there have been allegations with the Getty and Stability AI one that the evidence is maybe a bit circumstantial and flimsy. But it's going to be interesting, certainly.
And from a legal point of view as well, the terms and conditions that are on the websites of these clients, which says, you're coming to my website and you're not allowed to use the content for these purposes. I guess that's a different legal sort of aspect or argument than necessarily the copyright one, is it? Can they come back into that
I mean,
respect?
if you're not sure you can get them on copyright, then that people put those terms in there, say their database terms of use or their website terms of use, and then if you then do that, subject to a test of reasonableness, then you're breaching the contract that you sort of agree to when you start looking at that material. So that's a contractual method of protection, and also, we're seeing technical methods out there where people, the owners, are sort of coating or glazing images so that it's more difficult for AI to read them. Of course, anyone does that, then the next thing you know, there'll be a technical workaround. But that's another thing that is being done to make it harder to get your material plundered, as it were. I think that an element of this is sort of it is a sort of moral one, in that, if I were, as a human, learning how to sort of write stuff or create artwork by by getting inspiration from third-party material, then I would do that by buying those books and learning from them. And I'd be paying to do that.
Yes.
And so I think the objection here is, well, look, AI is doing this, but it's managing to do it without paying us for access to this material, and that's not fair. So I think there is a big moral argument there, and it may be that the judgments, when they come out, if they do come down on the side of some sort of recompense, they will be doing it for that moral reason, even if the it might not be a legal interpretation consistent with previous ones. But we often get that, you know, judgments and legislation are often done for policy reasons rather than to be strictly legally consistent.
Yeah, and I suppose from a business or use application, if you know, if I'm a user, if I'm doing business research or I'm doing research for my business, then you know, I pay for subscription on the internet, or as you said, I pay for a subscription to a newspaper. As we move forward with AI, I think we're going to see AI services which say, well, look, we're using reputable sources, we're using content from journalists who are actually in the field and know what's going on, rather than somebody or something that's making it up in their bedroom sort of type aspect. So I think the business model is going to change in that as well, because when you come to an agreement with reputable businesses like New York Times or sort of something like that, then you can that will promote your AI model because it's trained on good content and it's kept up to date with good content. So I guess it would shake out that way as well, from a business as well as a legal perspective.
Yeah, I think then much of this litigation is to give the parties sort of bargaining power for when some royalty deal is thrashed out.
Good point. Good point. So looking at the other side of it now, so when I use AI and I'm creating output, be that text, be it images, be that music or any of the content, the multimodal sort of stuff that comes along now, what's the copyright and view on that? You know, is Andrew Gall created it, or is OpenAI created it if all I've done is the prompt? What's the sort of view on the legal on your perspective on this sort of output side of things?
Most jurisdictions are saying that in terms of copyright, it has to have human creativity behind it. So that, for example, in America has led to cases where elements created by the human have had copyright protection and elements created by AI have not. And there has been a similar approach to patenting. So, for instance, the UK Supreme Court last month upheld earlier decisions when it said AI cannot be named as an inventor in a patent protection in a patent application. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that if you, as an individual, use AI to devise an invention, so it facilitates that your inventive step for you, then if you still made that inventive step, then you're the inventor and you can apply for patent protection. The other thing is that the IPO, in commenting on this, said the government will nevertheless keep this area of law under review to ensure, you know, that they are supporting innovation and the use of AI. So who knows, it might well be that that stance changes. Perhaps when we, you know, there's been a suggestion that AI is going to take over a lot of things. Perhaps the first AI judge in a patent court will be the first one to rule that AI can be an inventor after all.
Right, yeah.
My own feeling is that that is the fact that you can't necessarily get copyright or patent protection for purely AI generated IP doesn't necessarily kill its commercial viability, because all it means is you're going to be sticking that stuff out there. And you might be monetizing it. It just means that other people could do the same thing. So I think that commercially, it's a less, and legally, you know, it's a less important issue than the infringement one.
Okay, that's interesting, that really, isn't it? Because I suppose, but as you were speaking there, I was thinking about, okay, if I've used a Microsoft, or I've written my, you know, I've used a Microsoft to discover my patentable thing and I've written it on a computer, we don't say that we use this Microsoft or we use this computer to get to that point. But I think we are seeing now the powers of AI are becoming so powerful that it's like the AI was the thing that did 99% of it, I was the one who just happened to press the button to send it to the patent office, sort of type thing. I guess we're going to get to a point of legally, we get like to a Turing test of sort of saying, well, can you tell the difference, or is the computer better than the one who's being creativity? Is that
That could be the case, yeah. I think also, unsurprisingly, you are now getting cases of AI generated art where somebody's incorrectly alleging that they were the human author of it. Now, you can actually detect that sort of stuff at the moment, but that won't always be the case. And it's probably going to be even harder, for. Now, probably if you do have a 100% AI generated invention, who necessarily is going to know if you say, well, I invented that, so there might be a certain amount of fakery going on there.
Great, great. So we covered inputs, we've covered outputs. Look, taking a step back to the more wider regulation now about this, the power of AI, and is are the humans going to keep control, and issues about confidentiality and data and stuff like that. We've got EU regulation coming. Got the UK ran their Bletchley Park sort of thing in the last year, and US. What could you give us a bit of a quick run through on what sort of regulation is currently in the pipeline, and what is
Yeah, well, I think the EU was first out, out of the gate with the AI Act. That all the regulatory frameworks are trying to balance protecting the public with encouraging innovation. The EU AI Act is probably the most hardcore in terms of heavy regulation of the industry, and. It doesn't look like the MEPs are, inclined to water that down at all. They're well behind it, but inevitably there's been a certain amount of pushback from industry. And you've even had Emmanuel Macron saying, this is going to put people off. And the EU doesn't have much of an AI industry anyway. And what's the point of being the leading regulator in an industry you don't actually operate in, By an analogy, it's great having, say, you're not going to have any road accidents if in your village you have a 10 mile an hour speed limit. But what's the point of that if no one ever comes to that village because it's such a pain to drive through it, So I think there is a, as someone who helped advise companies on the implementation of GDPR, I can see why. There is going to be a sort of technical and financial burden complying with this. That there might be in the danger, as with GDPR, that a lot of American companies are going to say, well, it's just not going to deal with you then. Smaller companies are going to find it expensive to comply with, and you might get a lot of big thing ones saying, well, just take the risk, see what happens. And then they'll get whacked with fines occasionally. I think that's partly why the UK, whom we've been told wants to be a quote AI superpower unquote, came up with a white paper. And the UK stance seems to be we're not imposing black and white regulations yet because this is still a bit of a moving target. And you can understand why they're saying that, but at the same time, you think, well, you want to do it sometime. And I think also it is sensible that the UK realizes that AI is applying in so many different areas that you probably need to allocate AI supervision between existing regulatory bodies. But on the other hand, that just could end up resulting in a whole load of parallel talking shops. And then you've got the US who again have produced an executive order where they also are trying to balance privacy and safety and security against promoting competition. And I think, the fact that they produced their executive order just before the Bletchley Summit was a deliberate attempt to say, look, the US is going to be the king of this industry, like all the others. So if you want to know where the benchmark is going to be, it's us, not anyone else. So I think that anyone's hope of there being one global regulatory regime which everyone can comply with isn't going to happen. So as with data privacy, where you've got a European regime, in America it differs from state to state, and anyone trying to sell and process data internationally has to look at how they can comply with all those regimes. And I think it's going to be the same with AI.
It's still shaking itself out. But so when I've done the parallel thinking with that as well, you do get to the point that sort of saying, well, okay, the European seems to have been a reasonable, sensible de facto thing on the data sort of side of things, which isn't that right? The corporates tend to use that as sort of the standard. But I think if they go too far with the AI part, then some companies are going to turn around and say, well, it's not worth us. We're just going to switch it off. You won't get access to this great tool now in Europe because legally we don't comply, and it's just your IP address won't be able to access the sort of system. Is that going to be
Yeah,
a sort of a type of scenario in the
I think
balancing?
some might, or they might say, look, they might just take the risk. There've been a number of social media companies, banks, medical organizations that have had whopping great fines for breaching GDPR, and there might be a few examples made in that way with AI. But a lot of companies are going to think, well, it's worth the risk. I think the added, I mean, as GDPR, one of the things that rapidly made GDPR unworkable was the amount of data processing that went on using AI, which made the whole idea of transparency of data processing completely unworkable. And with AI regulation, of course, where it's all AI, the exponential evolution of the sector means that anything drafted now might be practically unworkable by the time it comes into force. I mean, it's like me writing a health and safety manual for a World War I biplane, and by the time that that comes into force, everyone's flying jet planes.
Well, there's an image in The Economist, I'm not sure if it was this week or last week, where I had this image now of the human with the little mechanical dog in the little cage where you carry dogs and that around in, which was sort of the now, oh yes, we've got the EU regulation coming out, but by the time the actual regulation is out, the next cartoon that the Economist cartoon artist had was this massive dog, like three times bigger than the human, and he couldn't get it back into the cage, as you said, because by the time it actually becomes law and implemented, the model has changed and the business model has changed and the technology has changed that you're trying to pin down, isn't it?
So it's going to be a challenge. I mean, I think at the same time, there is a certain amount of paranoia about how Skynet is going to become sentient and take over the world. I think, as you said, when we were at Bletchley, I think the changes will be significant, but they're going to be in terms of the facilitation and augmentation of existing activities in terms of business processes, value chains, drug discovery, diagnosis, treatment, and that sort of thing. So they will be significant changes, but at the same time, once you're living them, they will feel quite mundane. I mean, if you think about it, the real things that have changed our lives over the last few decades could probably be boiled down to increased computing power, the internet, and mobile phones. Now, those things have made an immense difference to the way we live. And yet, when you wander around, they don't seem that intrusive. They've just fitted in, and we don't think anything about them. So I suspect that that will happen with AI as well.
And I suppose I'm on the general positive side of how AI is going to go. A book that I'd recommend people have a look at, or look at the summary of it, and I'll put the details in this podcast and video posting, is there by called The Coming Wave by Mustafa Suleiman, so he was the founder of DeepMind, And a lot of that, the book is really about, can you constrain AI? Can you regulate it? Can you legally sort of control it? And he not only talks about AI, but DNA manipulation and that as well now. And these two things coming together with AI, with cheap DNA manipulation and all that, can you regulate them? And my conclusion at the end of the book was that, as we've just been talking about, there's going to be a lot of legal stuff. There's going to be a lot of regulation. And the danger is that the good companies are the ones that end up getting constrained by it, and the bad actors don't get constrained by it at all anyway. So we have the cost of the managing it, but we don't necessarily get the benefits of health improvements, logistics improvements, environmental improvements, improvements to our educational sort of things like that, if we over-regulate things and we don't have that freedom to create, these new benefits that are coming from them. Have you got a view of it like that, or
Yeah,
perspective?
I agree that the people that the bad actors are not going to pay any attention to the regulations, and unfortunately, I think it was the historian Niall Ferguson said that any new technology gets adopted first by the geeks, then by the criminals, and then by everyone else. And I think that that would probably happen with AI.
Yeah, you're right. They probably are the leading edge in that with these sort of things. So, yeah.
I
So
think
just
also there's been a lot of worry that AI will make everyone's job redundant. I don't think that's necessarily the case. We've had, with the agrarian revolution and the industrial revolution, and then the initial technological revolution. Certain jobs did become redundant, but then we adapted, and it created other jobs. Probably the reason this time there is more paranoia is because for the first time it looks like it's white collar jobs that might be at risk of being streamlined.
No, great point. Great point. I was having this discussion with somebody else of that recently. Actually, it was an investor in that in Cambridge, and I was saying to him, I said that because of the way I'm using AI now with my Cambridge degree and my MBA, I'm in awe of what it can do, despite what I've been learning and doing for years. So I feel the one most threatened rather than, but also I suppose, like, taking the legal industry, if you can get rid of the mundane stuff of trying to find past cases or trying to write documents, you can get on with doing the real things, like catching criminals or catching trademark infringers or catching the people that are actually doing the copyright sort of thing, rather than doing the mundane stuff. Is an example that I would have, where the roles are going to change and the AI stuff can hopefully get rid of the mundane stuff that'll allow people to get on and do the real things. That is a more general view I'd have with AI.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And I think also, although often say in the legal profession there is sometimes, it can be sometimes a bit slow to adopt technology solutions. I think that with AI, because it is a software driven, most of the solutions that are going to be of use to different industry sectors are going to be fairly user friendly and they're going to be affordable. Whereas, for instance, with virtual reality up until fairly recently, the hardware, in terms of both, size and expense, has been one has been a barrier to being adopted as quickly as it might be. But I don't think you're going to see that with AI.
No, I agree. I think we'll have the phases of using AIs in particular process stages, which will improve productivity and improve quality of output. The bit that I've been doing in my career for 20 years is interesting, though. I find interesting is, how does it change the complete value chain sort of within an industry? How does it totally disrupt, be that things like electric vehicles now is disrupting the hydrocarbon industry, the electricity industry, the car industry, the whole sort of autonomous vehicles are going to change it. But as you said, those require big asset infrastructures or type investments. AIs could revolutionize consulting, education, health, in lots of places that don't require that are more software based or more interaction based. So I think we will see different business models popping up in those spaces. So it's going to be up to organizations to transform their businesses before another business transforms their business with AI, I think is where I come from with this. So, Simon, thank you so much. Been great getting your insights on AI.
Likewise.
Great getting your fantastic learning and your depth of knowledge around legal aspects to it. So really appreciate your time, and we'll post the details that people can follow up with you if they want to find out how you can help them in their businesses and their transformations and that as well.
Yeah, certainly. Happy to talk to anyone.
Please give this interview a 5-star like and subscribe for future interviews. Thank you.